tonight and taking time out from this lovely evening to be with us. I'm Jim DeLange. I'm the senior pastor of St. Francis Lutheran Church in San Francisco, where I've served for 12 years. And these are some of the members of our congregation on this side and on this side. There are 16 of us all together that are here. We'll make about a 45-minute presentation, and then we'll leave some time for questions and answers afterwards. And we also have some materials here, which you're free to pick up. In July 1990, after a three-day trial, an ELCA discipline committee suspended our congregation and also First United Lutheran Church of San Francisco from membership in the ELCA for calling an openly gay pastor and two openly lesbian pastors. They were seminary graduates, Ruth Frost and Phyllis Zilhard, and also Jeff Johnson, who is not here tonight. At the time that these three people were called, they were not on the ELCA's approved candidacy list, solely because they refused to agree to that part of the ELCA guidelines for candidates for ministry and for clergy that requires gay and lesbian clergy to be celibate and promise to be celibate into the future. The suspension is to remain in effect until December 31st, 1995, after which our two congregations will be expelled from the ELCA unless we withdraw the calls or the ELCA changes its policies toward gay and lesbian clergy. The effect of the suspension is that we cannot vote as a congregation at synod assemblies, nor can we petition the church on any matter. We did not, nor will we, after 1995, lose our church property, or, you know, we'll still be a Lutheran church. Unless some changes are made in ELCA policy toward its gay and lesbian clergy or some other action by the churchwide assembly this month in Kansas City, or 2 years from now, and December 31st, 1995, our two congregations will be expelled from the ELCA. What led our congregation to this decision, to challenge the church in such an overt and public way? After all, the ordinations in January 1990 were attended by about 1,000 people in San Francisco and hundreds of others in satellite services around the country in Washington, D.C., Chicago, Minneapolis, and elsewhere. All the major television networks covered the story at the time. The New York Times and other major newspapers did stories on it. Time magazine did a feature story, and Ruth and Phyllis were pictured in that Time magazine story. In the next few minutes, you will hear from some of us who were there at the time and from some of us who have joined St. Francis since. You'll hear a little bit of our individual stories, and you will also, hopefully, we'll give you a snapshot of what our mission ministry is. We hope to have some time, as I said, for questions, but tomorrow morning at breakfast, while we have all kind of agreed that we'll sit at different tables rather than together with our suspenders and for a suspended congregation. And, and our buttons so that if you wish to talk to us, you can in a more personal way. These suspenders and these buttons you can get, by the way, for a small donation at the end of our session tonight. For me, as a Lutheran pastor of some 30 years and as a church leader that worked nearly full-time for 5 years helping to bring about the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, there were three motivating reasons for my agreeing with our congregation's decision to ordain these three highly qualified seminary graduates. One was Christ's call to be in mission to all people. St. Francis is a 100-year-old congregation, but at this time in our history, we are three blocks from Castro and Market Street, which is the center of the gay community in San Francisco. probably 75,000 gay or lesbian people live within a few blocks of a radius of our church. If they were out of the closet, our church had to be out, our pastors had to be out in support, or our ministry would have little credibility. As one of our very longtime members said in her testimony at the trial, we couldn't not do it. Secondly, it was a simple matter of justice for a whole class of people who had been too long persecuted, especially by the church, who has for years been beating up on them with about five Bible passages of questionable relevance to homosexuality. Not because of anything that these folks had done, but because strictly of who they were. I saw it as the civil rights movement all over again. Third, I could not bear to see the Lutheran Church, of which I was so much a part and had been so much a part for so long, behave in such a hypocritical way. We have dozens, well, I shouldn't say dozens, we have hundreds of gay and lesbian pastors in the ELCA, always have had, and they serve with distinction. The bishops know who they are. The guideline for gay and lesbian clergy and seminary graduates really says, when we ask, please lie. To me, such a duplicitous policy was and is morally reprehensible and needed to be exposed and needed to be challenged. The calls and the very public ordinations were an effort to do just that. Whether you agree with us or not, we are honored that you came here tonight to hear our story, our witness. And like most congregations in the West, St. Francis is not a large congregation. We are 120 members. About 65% of us are, about 35% of us are straight. About 65% of us are gay, lesbian, or bisexual. And there are 16 of us here tonight at Holden, and have been here all week. And I'd like to introduce now one of us, Mari Irvin. Mari.
Thank you. 2.5 minutes. Okay. My name is Mari Griffith Irvin. I'm a professor of educational and counseling psychology at the University of the Pacific in Stockton, California, and a member of the St. Francis congregation since early 1990. After an exodus of nearly 20 years from any affiliation with organized religion, I joined the St. Francis community as a direct result of the ordinations of Phyllis, Ruth, and Jeff. My participation in the ecclesiastical trial in July 1990 served to confirm my sense of coming home to the very best of the Lutheran tradition, which was enacted by the actions of the St. Francis and First United congregations in calling openly homosexual persons to ordination. My history is typical, I think, of many people in this room. I am the granddaughter of Lutheran Norwegian immigrant homesteaders who settled in the Dakota Territory in the 1880s. My earliest memories are of attending Sunday school with my cousins in a very small rural North Dakota community. I graduated from St. Olaf College in 1955. Typical of many women of my generation, I married, I had two sons, and I lived out my family life in large part through involvement in Lutheran congregations wherever we lived. In other words, for nearly the first 40 years of my life, I enacted my life as best I could, quote, the way it was supposed to be. No time for details tonight, believe me, but my husband's chronic debilitative disease, MS, forced me to deal with issues of my own identity development, which had been buried in the common pattern of women of my age. In other words, acknowledge only those parts of yourself which could be validated by marriage, family, and societal approval. Whatever else didn't fit had to be denied or disowned. I describe myself now through a variety of descriptors. Among them, I'm a friend, I'm a colleague, a teacher, a psychologist, a Christian, a Lutheran. But for over 15 years, I have also named that core of myself which needed to be acknowledged and honored if I were to claim my wholeness as a child of God. Lesbian. In the St. Francis congregation, all of me is honored. All of me is accepted. which explains why I travel over 87 miles each way to participate in the life of this congregation. Although currently a member of the Congregational Council and active in a variety of ways within the congregation, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about the worship of St. Francis. I serve on the Worship Committee, which is the largest of the committees of the congregation, I think, with volunteer membership of about a quarter of the active members, because worship is an integral part of the life of St. Francis. Inclusive liturgical language forms have been and are continuing to be developed by the congregation to respond to the very diverse needs of members within this congregation. And beyond inclusive language, the congregation is actively working and struggling to explore a variety of the images of God in its expressions of worship. Ours is not an endeavor without a great deal of family discussion, you know what I mean, and sometimes a fair amount of energy. But we are committed to this vital task. Now I'd like to introduce to you Hannah Nowakowski, who's another member of the congregation.
Hi, I'm Hannah, and I don't have anything nearly as eloquent as what Mari had, so I'm gonna kind of go off of the outline. I grew up all over Europe, Africa, Asia. I'm a military brat. And my faith heritage is Orthodox, Jewish, and Roman Catholic. And which is an interesting combination. I guess I spanned the spectrum of history. As a child and as an adolescent and as a young adult, I've really been involved in church and church activities. My commitment prior to St. Francis was in a Newman congregation. For those of you that know about it, it's kind of the best of the Catholic tradition. And I was very heavily involved in the peace and justice community, which in the 70s had its own homeless shelter and food bank and whatnot. With John Paul II, a lot of that went out the window. I joined St. Francis. I was introduced to St. Francis by an ex-partner. And I very quickly realized that there were things going on at St. Francis that I really wanted to be a part of. I was very active in the Vietnam War movement. I was very active in the women's movement. The idea that people can be discounted by bodies of officialdom is something that's just nauseating to me. I find that kind of hypocrisy to be just revolting, especially in religion, when we talk about the fact that we're all children of God, and yet we very purposefully and very cruelly deny people access to their legitimacy. To me, it is a simple matter of justice. To me, it is a simple matter of righting something that is wrong and of leading the way. I don't share the belief that organizations always have the right answers. And if I understand Lutheran history correctly, that is exactly how the Lutheran Church was formed. In my real life, I'm working on a doctorate. I work as a resource specialist in California. Within the church, within St. Francis, I've served on the education committees, occasionally as assisting minister and usherette or whatever. I also commute 87 miles each way to go to St. Francis. I live in a very redneck community of Stockton, California, which really doesn't offer me the opportunity to go to a place of equity to worship, and that's very important to me. I've been asked to talk about the involvement in the worship of awe, and I'm going to make that very brief because, yes, we do try and do that. I guess what we try and do is to acknowledge all of the different segments of our community within the worship, and that when I joined the church, which was a little over 2 years ago, our worship was conducted primarily by men, and that was of concern to me. And so we have processed that, and as more women have joined our church, we've been able to have a more balanced team of men and women representing the community, as well as to have heterosexuals and lesbians and gay men and bisexual people. So that, you know, we come to the altar as a diverse group that we are, and we're each representing ourselves, and there's a real integrity in that. And I want to pass this on to Max Kirkberg.
My name is Max Kirkberg. I grew up in a town of about 500 people in southwest Iowa that calls itself the Swedish capital of Iowa. It was founded in 1870 by a Lutheran minister specifically for teetotaling Swedish Lutherans. It's... Well, we've never managed to get too big.
It's a blessing.
We're best known as the hometown of Virginia Christine, which most of you don't know by that name, but if I said Folger's Mrs. Olson, I graduated from Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. I did my graduate work at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and I've been a professor of geography at San Francisco State since 1965. On the church, I'm a member of the church council. I sing in the choir, though I tell everybody I'm there largely for color and contrast. I've been an usher and a lecturer. I'm on the education and outreach committees, and I've been trained in the AIDS caregivers group. I was asked to talk about church activities that at least in part come out of the education committee. Before I identify these, a word about how I came to St. Francis. I came to our church about 8 years ago to surprise a former roommate who used to tease me about being Lutheran. He was Catholic, and I was just tickled when I heard that he had joined, or he was going to a Lutheran church. I knew nothing about St. Francis. So I came to the church and didn't find him because by that time he'd gotten quite ill and bitter, but I was blown away with the diversity of the faces of St. Francis. I saw people that I recognized like me, but I also saw everybody else, and both were important to me. So I returned next week and the next week and quickly joined Bible study, not because I was interested in Bible study, but I figured it would be a quick way to know people. The Bible study amazed me. It was a full investigation into the culture and the history of the book as it was written, as well as a thoughtful discussion of what it meant to us today. Best of all, thanks to Pastor Hiller. It was fun. In fact, we spend much of our time giggling in Bible study. In addition to Bible study, our church periodically offers evening or Sunday classes on topics which have ranged from my memory on things like South Africa. We spent 5 weeks on Israeli-Arab situation. We've had classes on the aging process and classes on women of the Bible. Each spring we hold a congregational weekend retreat organized around themes. And most recently we have begun a series of faith and life groups in which small groups meet regularly in each other's homes and share issues and journeys. And as my last item from the Education Committee, 5 years ago, I came to Holden, and at that time, wore a tiny pink triangle. Some of you may not know the origins of the pink triangle. It was originally used by the Nazis to identify homosexuals in their concentration camps. So it's become a symbol of gay pride. Since 5 years ago, an organization has developed, which is considerably more militant, focused especially on AIDS, and this is their symbol. Silence equals death. It's fairly self-explanatory. From a group called ACT UP. And that's the end of my talk. My good friend, Barbara Kling.
Unlike most of you, I was not raised Lutheran, and I'm not from the Midwest.
Inclusive.
I'm a Californian, raised Presbyterian. Came to Holden by a fluke of Stehekin being closed down the winter of 1977. And came here to spend Christmas of 77, and as a result came back the following year and lived here. And we used to joke and say, well, here we're Presbyterians doing missionary work among the Lutherans. And instead they converted us, and we are now happily Lutherans. And I've been a member at St. Francis for about 8 to 10 years. We disagree. When I say we, my husband. But, so we were going to another Lutheran church when we went back to San Francisco from Holden, And we were very active for a couple of years, and then we found we weren't going. And after about a year, we said, well, this is stupid to stay members of a church if we're not going to be active and we don't attend. So we started searching around, and when we hit St. Francis, we didn't search any further. The things that were really meaningful to me was good preaching, good hugs, smiles, caring people, good food, a few laughs, and a few cries. And that was there, and discovered that the first time we walked in, and have continued going there. I was very happy when the congregation decided to call Ruth and Phyllis. As a woman, I was very happy to have two women coming who were preachers and to have that role model. And it didn't bother me that as a heterosexual woman, that when I saw Phyllis or Ruth up, that they were, I got very emotional. I'm used to looking at 10-year-olds out here. I see adults, I get all nervous and emotional here. And it didn't bother me that I was looking at a lesbian woman. It was great to see a woman in front. Another thing I was very interested in is a cause. And St. Francis really tries to be socially conscious in the city and out. And one of our big outreaches is to Central America, to El Salvador. We have a sister parish, our church, the Resurrection, down in El Salvador. Two of our members, we've been able at different times to send two different members down there. And Bishop Gomez came to our church when he was visiting in San Francisco. And we have a great benevolence to them. I think we've been a sister parish with them for 5 or 6 years, and we've sent over $10,000 down to them through various fundraisers. And as the vice president of AAL, I have to put one of our helping hand events every year goes down to a church in El Salvador. And one of the loving, smiling, great huggers in our church is he used to be our administrative assistant, and he just resigned earlier this year, so I pass it over to great Ken.
My name is Ken Noble, and I was born and raised in Colorado and grew up in the Lutheran Church. And as with Mari, I left the church for well over 20 years. And it was about 10 years ago that I stumbled onto St. Francis after completing a drug and alcohol recovery program. And because St. Francis was located in the neighborhood where I lived, I dropped in there one Sunday, and from the moment I entered the church, it was I had the same feeling as Mari, as I was home again. Because as a child, I loved the church, but as an adult, I felt total rejection. And I was pleased when I didn't realize when I walked into St. Francis that it was going to be a welcoming of lesbian and gay people, and it pleased me to find out that was so. And I've served served in St. Francis the past 10 years as a church sexton, and more recently as a parish administrator. Before leaving my position in mid-May. I've also been active on several committees and support groups, and I've been asked to speak just briefly on our HIV support group, which is in conjunction with a sister parish of ours in the neighborhood called Most Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. And St. Francis has currently about 12 members who offer practical, emotional, and spiritual support to those living with AIDS. And within the past 4 years, my clients have been my older brother, Marvin, who was also a member of our congregation, who died 4 years ago. And 1 year ago, lost my life partner and best friend, Jim Berg, who served St. Francis as the corporate treasurer for over 2 years. Our congregation has lost about 20 members from AIDS, and our members have lost friends numbering well into the hundreds, I'm sure. Without the support of the pastoral staff and its members, I don't think many of us could have been able to cope under the stress of so many who are ill and who are dying. St. Francis is serving the community in which it is located, and we need the pastoral staff who are able to more directly communicate with the large lesbian and gay community surrounding our church. I'd like to now introduce Aileen Flood.
I'm Aileen Flood, and I did grow up in the Midwest in Minnesota, in Luther Church. And I migrated to California and ended up close to where St. Francis Church is, and I discovered there was a gay community and arthritis. And so anyway, as most of you probably don't know, when you retire, you make short work of everything you do, so I'm going to go right into telling you that I was a member of the church council, and I'm now serving on the senior ministry committee and work as a sacristan and whatever they call me to do that I can do. And the St. Francis has a pretty active senior group going, and we meet on every Wednesday, and most of the people who come to our senior group are quite elderly. I would say many of them are in their 80s. Incidentally, I'm not 80 yet. And we try to help these people because most of them are living alone in the big city. There are a lot of people like that who are living alone and they need to get out and find some place to go. And they do come on Wednesdays, and we have a devotional and singing, and there's a hot lunch every Wednesday. And we do have a nice group of people. We take them on tours on the ferry boat ride and different things that we can do for them. And we also keep in contact with these people. If they don't show up for a Wednesday, we're on the phone to see if they're okay. And this is about what we do on these Wednesdays. And Phyllis, who most of you know here, works with the spiritual needs of these people and helps them with their medical problems and things like that. So I'll introduce you to Jack Kling.
Jack Kling. I have so many names. husband, retired teacher, part-time chef for seniors, mm-hmm. along with several others. I help prepare Thanksgiving dinner for neighborhood people. I'm an AIDS caregiver. I've been with my person with AIDS now for 3 years. He is a member of our family. They arrange banquets for people with AIDS. I'm a gardener, an artist, a hugger, a slow learner, but steady and reliable.
That's your resume?
I'm looking for a job, as you can see. New Lutheran, as opposed to an old Lutheran. Former resident of Holden Village, a listener, very often too serious. Proud to be a pledged member of St. Francis. Or one of those people from that church. Diane?
Okay, I'm Diane DeLang, and I became a member of the St. Francis community when I married Jim a year ago in May. Before that, I was a member of a congregation in Marin County where I was the president of the congregation, and Jim and I met at a synod convention. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how the congregation has come to the rescue of a homeless family. A couple of years ago, a father and his daughter attended church a couple of times, and they obviously were in need, but they weren't at that point able to accept help. A little more than a year ago, the father did call Jim and say that he was ill and needed to go to the hospital, and he needed someone to take care of his daughter, and they were living in a hotel room someplace. They really were homeless. So instantly, the congregation mobilized and got him to the hospital and got the daughter to a home where she could be cared for, at least temporarily, and we were able to start doing something for them. He gave us permission to have some things done for the daughter, and obviously he's going to be in the hospital and something might happen, he had to do this. And she had never been to school. She was eight and a half years old, never been to school because of his psychological difficulties. He was unable to trust anyone long enough to allow her to go to school. So as the director of a learning center myself, I was able to take her in, get tested, start tutoring her so that when she was enrolled in school in September, she would be able to function somewhat in a classroom. And she was. And she's. I've worked with her now for a year. She's doing very well in school, has adjusted. She's living with in a very good foster situation that was arranged through the church. And we've also, there are about half a dozen people who are actively involved in caring for her and her father, getting her to tutoring, getting her to a therapist, getting him to therapist, getting it all organized. And we've also had some dealings with the social services people that have been very, very positive, which isn't always the case. They often can be suspicious of what's going on with organized groups. But it's worked very well for this child and her father, and she has a much brighter future. We've made the commitment to take care of her, to make sure that things are all right with her until she's 18, the congregation. So she's now 9, and we have some years to go. And I'm going to pass it on to Carol.
Okay. Hi, my name is Carol Peterson, and I'm a recent member of St. Francis. I grew up in San Diego, was raised a Lutheran, and left the Lutheran Church somewhere right before college. I came to St. Francis actually through Holden. I came up last summer with a friend that I had worked with. I did relief work in Ethiopia after college, and she invited me to come up here for a week, and I thought, I'd come out as a lesbian, and I thought, as I'm driving up, thinking, oh no, what am I going to do up here? I had these visions of Ludacris eating Norwegians that he knew who I was. And I got here, and I just found this wonderful community of people. And Allison was here last summer, and I felt very welcome. And I knew I had to come back. And I had met some other people up here that suggested that I find St. Francis. And I walked into an Advent service one evening, and Phyllis and Ruth were reading it, and I cried through the whole Advent service. It was really nice to be able to come home and to feel included and to feel part of a community that not only focused on, that made me feel comfortable with my sexuality, but also focused on things that I was concerned about. World hunger, social justice, the elderly, and all sorts of things. The church is a very diverse and well-integrated place. And I felt like I fit right away. So I've just recently been put on the discipleship committee, which I found me to do dishes after. I'm starting to make my way into other communities. But I look forward to making it a long-term home and a place to worship and to serve my community. And I'm not sure who I'm supposed to
I think I'm supposed to say something next. I think I was given the assignment to talk a little bit about our child care center. We have, in 1977, the previous pastor and his wife started a child care center for low-income families. It has continued to develop over the years, and we have 38 children in this center, 26 of whom are a part of a state contract in which the parents are getting their lives back together again. Some of the parents are in prison, and are being in the care of their grandparents or in foster care. And the other 12 are full fee paying parents. And so it makes a quite a mix. So we have a mixture of yuppies and yuppie parents and parents who are in jail. And, you know, it's quite a mix. So this we have an excellent director who has been with us nearly all of the time. And so the church is very active. On the board, we have women from the Junior League. Three of the members of St. Francis who are gay are on the board of the child care center. And the church subsidizes the child care center with scholarships about $12,000 a year, plus a lot of in-kind kinds of stuff. Nancy Barker was our congregational president during the trial, and I'd like to have her talk a little bit.
Well, I'm Nancy Barker. I'm from the Midwest, graduate of St. Olaf College. I married a forester, and we moved all over the country. We've been members of 9 different Lutheran congregations. When we moved to San Francisco, we were just looking for a Lutheran church. We got the map out, found one that we could get to on the underground, and St. Francis was it, and we never went anyplace else. We were impressed. Well, you walk in and you think you're in a church in North Dakota, what it looks like, the structure and so forth. The membership really impressed us just looking around. There were a number of very elderly people. There were a lot of men. There were a few blacks. There were a few Asians, a few Hispanics. Some street people were there. There were people who were obviously handicapped both physically and mentally, but everybody was there, and they weren't just worshiping. Everybody was at coffee too, and you know, it was just a wonderful experience, and we just kept coming back. Paul and I had really never had any experience that we knew of with gay and lesbian people, and this was very, very new to us. But we felt so welcomed, and we heard the stories of these people. We heard what they had experienced. We witnessed their faith, and we witnessed their sharing and their giving and their caring. And we knew that they are our brothers and sisters in Christ, and that we belonged there with them. The opportunity for us to call Ruth and Phyllis came from an organization that, from the outside, that asked us to call lesbian pastors. And this whole experience has been, for me and for Paul, something that has changed our lives. And somehow we have found in St. Francis was the place where we could really, for the first time, I think, felt like we were acting out our faith. And in many ways, through all the different organizations and different missions that St. Francis has, the whole experience has been just marvelous. Regretfully, about a year ago, we left San Francisco, but our heart is still in San Francisco, and we now live in Spokane. St. Francis is a remarkable congregation in many ways. As you've heard, there's only 125 or so members. We do an awful lot of things, and the congregation gives a lot. That little congregation is among the top 10 in giving per capita in the entire ELCA. As you heard, we continue to give to the ELCA despite the fact that we are suspended, which to me is quite remarkable, because I hear many churches, when they disagree with the ELC, with the church, first thing they say is, well, we won't give anymore. We'll hold our funds, we'll give what we want to. Well, we still give. However, immediately after the trial, which was, you know, getting into stewardship season, we looked around and we realized that we could not continue per usual. So we called a meeting of the congregation, or of the council, invited members of the congregation to come, and pastors and lay leaders throughout the Bay Area to come and discuss this issue with us. What can we do with our benevolence now that we are not really fully a part of the ELCA? We knew that we had a lot of people that were very, very hurt by the decision. So after an evening's discussion and a lot of prayerful discussion, we determined that we would continue to give our regular benevolence. However, we would do it through designated gifts. So every month, St. Francis sends a check to the Synod and a list of places the money will go. Most of them are on the official ELCA designated gift list. We have a few things that we give to LLGM and AIDS Foundation and so forth, but every month the bishop has to sign his check, his name to these checks. So we continue there. As we said, we have given $10,000 over the past few years to El Salvador. We actively support Crop Walk, the AIDS Walk. Our senior program is for seniors outside of our congregation, so it's amazing what this little congregation does as far as with their financial gifts. I guess that's, I'll turn it over now to, who am I supposed to talk about?
Lee.
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 Lee. Lee.
Paul,
are you going to talk now?
Is Paul going to talk?
Am I going to talk? When we came, as Nancy said, San Francisco, we said, this is the first time we can church shop. Every other place we've lived, there's been one Lutheran church in town, and so that's where we've gone. Even though we've taught Sunday school and had the youth group, but couldn't take communion at some Lutheran churches because at the time I belonged to the Elk, so first Sunday of every month we'd travel 60 miles to a Lutheran church that would allow us to take communion. And so we did. A friend of mine said, try St. Francis. It's on the metro. It's got a nice ethnic mix and a great mix of people. You'll enjoy it. So we said, well, we'll give that first shot. We did, and as Nancy said, we never went anywhere else. Part of it was just walking in that first time and reading their newsletter. And there's information on the child care center, the senior center, the homeless program, and they participated in the mayor's homeless program in San Francisco, and the El Salvador, and all of these things going on. And Nancy and I have commented many times, if Christ came and dealt with the people, and you read everything and everyone he dealt with, that's what St. Francis was doing. Addressing and dealing with the needs of the people in the community, serving those at hand. And we just never went anywhere else. Tremendous experience. Had a very good friend of mine that got talked into coming to St. Francis by a friend, and he figured it was safe. He said, well, going to St. Francis, can't get in trouble going to St. Francis. And he said he no sooner sat down and he turned to his friend and he said, I know someone here from the office, and it's the regional forester, which was myself. And he said at that point he realized he was out of the closet, and had a nice visit with Nancy and I afterwards. And he later described it as, what a relief. He said, for 25 years I've spent half of my effort on the job and half protecting who I was. Now my total effort goes into the job. And why couldn't that have happened 25 years ago? He said, it was a tremendous relief to see Nancy and I sitting there and to be able to come out in that fashion.
I'm Lee. I was born and raised in Tulare, California, which is a small farming community down in the San Joaquin Valley. I spent 26 years there. I graduated from high school and went to work as a secretary in a law office for one attorney. I was a member of First Lutheran Tulare all of that time, confirmed, baptized, so on. And then after I had been there for the 26 years, I decided to pick up and move, and I came to San Francisco. It was a real experience for me, coming from a smaller community. At least it was smaller in those days. I think it's about 35 or 40,000 now. But big city, I wanted a big church. So I had my letter of transfer come to San Francisco to one of the larger congregations. And I was there from 1966 until 1975. Then I looked around and I thought, nobody even knows my name yet. but I hadn't really worked at getting into the big church either. It was, you know, you'd go to church in the morning, Sunday, 1 hour, that's it, and you go back the next Sunday, and that was about the size of it for me. So I thought, no, that old saying, you can take the kid out of the country kind of thing, and I decided I'd like a smaller church. So I went to St. Francis because it had a Scandinavian background. My mom was born in Finland. I don't speak the language, but she did. And I thought, well, I like those roots, so I'll go with that. So that's how I wound up at St. Francis. And I really enjoyed 1975. Up until 1981, 82, I was in the choir. That was about my only involvement. But in 1979, I moved to Walnut Creek, which is in East Bay. You go through Oakland and over the hill. And I thought, all right, you're over here, you're in a family community, so start looking around and finding a church over here so you're not, you commute 5 days a week, because I'm now working for a lawyer in San Francisco. And I thought, you need something here, you can establish relationships and have a family community kind of thing. And I went looking, and I was very surprised that nobody wanted to say hello, even when I took a bath on a Saturday night. So I kept driving back to St. Francis. As a matter of fact, I had the record until Mari and Hannah showed up. They drive farther than I do. But then it started gelling. I thought, I have always been taught in God a creator, and God don't make no junk. And I always believe that everybody's equal. And I was taught that, I grew up with it. In Tulare, I knew that. There weren't these differences. And at St. Francis, I realized these people are really practicing what they're preaching and teaching, and this I like, and I want to stay there. So I became involved in the congregation. I'm in the choir, and I'm a lecturer, coffee hour hostess once in a while. One thing I like is they have coffee hour every Sunday. I get my hugs to get me through the week till the next Sunday, instead of once a month. Been participating in some of the education classes, also the Michael's class Bible study on Sunday morning. And now on the discipleship committee, I just have served a 2-year term on the foundation committee, and I've been asked to tell you a little bit about the St. Francis Foundation. It was established about 10 years ago, and it's funded strictly through bequests of people who have been in our congregation and who have named our St. Francis Foundation as a beneficiary under their will. At the moment, we have about, our total capital assets are about $215,000. All we have to do is never spend principal, but always spend income. And as a result of that, the foundation committee, with confirmation of the church council and therefore the whole congregation, has made the percentages to go 40% to support the mission and ministry of St. Francis, but 60% to ministry outside of our congregation. And therefore, we can support a lot of the smaller groups or special areas that might not be getting a whole lot of money from ELCA or other places. Some of those that we've helped out and that we work hand in hand with as far as giving are seminary scholarships, our inner city church in the Bay Area when somebody needs help. A summer ago, there were donations to a congregation that had Laotian children. They were putting in a program for them, so we were able to help out on that front. Another big one of our interests is the Night Ministry of San Francisco, a real need, so we are able to help there. We match hunger contributions and crop walk through Helping Hands with AAL. We can get in on that as well. And summer day camperships for children. So that's just a little bit about the foundation. Now I'd like you to meet David Look.
We just got David and then Bruce Belcher. We just need to speed it up. I do want to make sure you folks have time for questions. And I see we have about 10 or 15 minutes left. So go ahead, David. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Dave Luck. I'm from Peoria, Illinois, where I was born and grew up. My home congregation is St. John's Lutheran. It's a German Austrian congregation. Both sides of my family settled in Illinois in the 1850s, and both sides of my family were signers of the original constitution for the church, and I have never left the church. I studied mathematics at Bradley University. I received my Master's of Science in Architectural Engineering from the University of Illinois. I served in the Army Corps of Engineers, after that, I joined the National Park Service. I've been with the National Park Service for the last 20 years. I've been openly gay the last 20 years, both in Washington, D.C., and in 1980, my job was transferred to San Francisco. Unlike most people, my identity, I don't have to hide, and that's a wonderful thing that the National Park Service has always been very open about that and doesn't mind. I am chief of the Preservation Assistance Branch for the Western Region. I have 8 employees. 75% of them are either gay or lesbian, and it's not because I hired them. Most of them were that before I became chief of the office. I've had 3 employees die of AIDS. The Park Service has been very, very supportive, including the regional director coming to the hospital and visiting. I have right now 2 employees who are HIV positive. I've involved in a number of ways at St. Francis in the refurbishing committee. Since I'm involved in historic preservation, I was asked to serve on the committee to help improve things. Our committee met for many years and developed a plan, and then Loma Prieta earthquake sort of interrupted everything. We had over $50,000 worth of damage of brick that fell off the church, and so we had to do a seismic retrofit plan. And so if you come to San Francisco now, it's a very beautiful little church. It's been lovingly restored. It's very liberal, as you've heard, but it's also very conservative. It's just like all of us. There's certain aspects of us that's liberal and certain aspects that are conservative, and it's a beautiful mixture, and I'm very proud to be a part of St. Francis. And I'd like to introduce Ruth and Phyllis. A lot of people think that we gave a call to Ruth and Phyllis so we could thumb our nose at, you know, at the ELCA. It's just totally the opposite. As you've heard, we're a church in a community that's largely gay and lesbian. We already had 1 straight minister and 2 gay ministers, and we were having a hard time attracting lesbian people to our congregation. And so we felt one of the best ways to do that is to call a lesbian minister, and we got double our money's worth.
My name is Phyllis Gilhart, and as you can tell from listening to these stories, it is a great privilege for me to be on the pastoral staff at St. Francis Lutheran Church. When I discovered that I was lesbian late in my seminary career, I had some difficult choices to make. I ended up staying in the system for a while. I actually got called to a congregation and realized I couldn't follow through and needed to be true to my deeper self. And so I really thought that I went and talked to my bishop and was taken off the list. At that time, I really thought that was the end of my career in ministry. I was with Ruth at that time, which has been an ongoing miracle of love and renewal and healing and wonder in my life. We've been together 9 years come September, and we're actually expecting a baby. I'm doing the work now, but I hope she'll catch up soon. That baby's due in October, so our lives are in a lot of flux that way. I just wanted to tell you a bit about an organization called Voice and Vision Lutheran Lesbian and Gay Ministry. And that is an organization that was founded when people got together around the cause of gay and lesbians being excluded from ordained ministry and the standard of duplicity that's been talked about here. And so this organization said, we need to have ministry to lesbian gay people in San Francisco. We want a Lutheran ministry there, but we want it to be from gay lesbian people to gay lesbian people to have the legitimacy that it really needs to really speak to those needs instead of always giving that your half-welcome message. And so that was the impetus for these congregations, St. Francis and also another church in San Francisco, First United, to call Ruth and I and our colleague Jeff Johnson. And so we spend maybe a quarter of our time doing work within the parish and the rest of our time doing work with Voice and Vision Lutheran Lesbian and Gay Ministry, which does programs of support, advocacy, education in the gay lesbian community throughout the Bay Area and really across the nation for Lutherans. We do lots of holy unions, far too much grief and loss, funeral work. We do groups around coming out, we do things around supporting families. We just offer a lot of different opportunities. Right now we're starting a program in Oakland for gay, lesbian, bisexual and questioning youth in Oakland. And so a place so that young people don't have to go through all of this agony of living a double life and then finding out that there's healing after, but getting a good start on their sexual self-esteem and their support within community. I have a little bit of literature here. I've got our most recent newsletter, which I hope you'll pick up, and then also our brochure just telling a little bit about who we are and what we do. We're supported through grassroots. St. Francis has provided our pastoral call, and through their benevolence work provides maybe 10% of LLGM's budget, but the rest of it really comes from pledgers, donors throughout the United States. So I, in that regard, have a mailing list here. If anyone's interested in getting our literature and supporting us, we would be very pleased to be in contact with you. And it's been very thrilling for us to know that people value what we're doing. People see that there's a great need and that the gospel has a powerful message for all people and for gay and lesbian people who have been very injured by the church. And so we very much appreciate the support that has kept us going for these last 3 years.
My name is Ruth Frost, and I have the same credentials as Phil, so I won't repeat them. I'm third generation clergy. My father was a seminary professor, he's now deceased, but he taught over 2,000 of the Lutheran pastors who are currently serving the Lutheran church. I've been groomed for ministry by my family. However, there was a problem. I was a lesbian. And so, while I did go to seminary, graduated from seminary, when I fell in love with Phyllis, my senior year in seminary, in preaching class of all places, I was faced with the decision that I knew that I needed to give up the dream of ministry in order to live out a full relationship with Phyllis and to stop hiding. I didn't think I'd be back in ministry. 5 years, I took a different direction. I did some chemical dependency treatment counseling and other jobs. 5 years later, we got the call to St. Francis, and lo and behold, we were both back in ministry. I just want to say that what's happening in the Lutheran Church now is that a tradition that has been founded on a sense of God's grace, the Lutheran tradition, has turned into a weapon of shame for gay and lesbian people. Grace has become, gay and lesbian people have become the litmus test for God's grace. It's kind of, even homosexual people are covered by God's grace. So therefore, we must deign to let them in. Well, first of all, we already are in. We're sons and daughters and sisters and brothers and cousins and in some cases, husbands and wives of the church. And I'm saddened by this because what has happened to a lot of lesbian and gay people is that the message of grace has become a message of shame. I certainly need grace as much as any of you in here need grace, but I don't need it for my homosexuality. And what St. Francis has given me is a place not only to do ministry, but to experience the grace that says to each person, you know, you are loved into wholeness by a God who created you gifted and who wants you to be free. And so I have come to realize that my sexuality is a gift. Not a disability, not an aberration, but a gift. And that's a great joy. Phyllis and I are not wearing suspenders simply because the ELCA has never recognized us as ELCA pastors, although we certainly wear them in solidarity with these dear people. I think since we're out of time here, I'm going to stop at this point. But just to say it, our work, unfortunately, a lot of our work is spent helping gay and lesbian people recover from the effects of religious abuse. And I look forward to the day when we don't have to be doing repair.
Thanks. Didn't miss it by much. We have about 5 minutes.